Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hälsosnack produceras av hälsocoacherna Lotta Lagerqvist och Victoria Carinci i samarbete med läkarkliniken FunMed. FunMed arbetar med precisionshälsa och funktionsmedicin. Är du nyfiken på vad det här innebär? Besök gärna funmed.se. Lotta och Victoria bjuder in gäster från olika delar av Hälsosverige. Innehållet är avsett som inspiration och ska inte ses som medicinsk rådgivning. Varje individ står för de åsikter och fakta som de uttrycker i podden. Varmt välkommen att bli inspirerad till ett hälsosammare och härligare liv.
Hej och välkommen till Hälsosnack. Idag kommer vi bjuda på ett avsnitt där vår hälsocoachvän Hala Elshemi Washbrook intervjuar Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride. Natasha är läkare, neurolog, neurokirurg, nutritionist och författare. Hon är skaparen av GAPS-dieten, det vill säga Gut and Psychology Syndrome, samt Gut and Physiology Syndrome. GAPS är ett kostprotokoll för att läka tarmen och balansera tarmfloran. Allt för att skapa en så bra förutsättning som möjligt för människor att läka från grunden, från en mängd symptom och diagnoser, utifrån synen att all disease begins in the gut. Och vi har tidigare intervjuat Natasha i avsnitt 189. Hala har gått Dr. Natashas utbildning till Certified GAPS Practitioner, så vi tyckte det passade bra att hon intervjuade Natasha. Den här gången med utgångspunkt i hennes bok som heter Vegetarianism Explained. Och den här intervjun är på engelska. Och med det sagt så drar vi igång intervjun.
First of all, a very warm welcome to you, Dr. Natasha. It's a really pleasure to talk to you. It's not the first time that you are on this pod, and Lotta and Victoria had you on this pod a while ago talking about GAPS. And this time I've got the honor to talk to you about vegetarianism and veganism as it is spreading very fast in Sweden and globally. And I would like you to share the knowledge and your experience around nutrition. And if we start with a small introduction around you, Dr. Natasha, you put together the diet, the GAPS, the Gut and Psychological Syndrome, also called GAPS, as I said, and which I understand was for healing your son who had learning disabilities.
Not only my son, but thousands of other children, because I worked with children with autism at the time. And then I realized that children with hyperactivity and attention deficit disorder and dyslexia and dyspraxia, and then adults with mental illnesses, and then children and adults with allergies and autoimmunity and skin problems and digestive problems and all sorts of physical problems, all ill because of the same cause. Right. All diseases begin in the gut. And that was a statement made by the father of modern medicine, Hippocrates, thousands of years ago. And today we know that he was absolutely correct. All diseases begin in the gut. And that's how the GAPS concept was born. GAPS stands for Gut and Psychology Syndrome and Gut and Physiology Syndrome. I have two books on this subject, Yellow Book and a Blue Book. That's the latest one, Gut and Physiology Syndrome, that came out in 2020. And the older one, the one that focuses on the brain, is the Yellow Book, which came out in 2004 for the first time. This is a second edition. So the yellow one focuses on the brain. The blue one focuses on the rest of the body. So the two books go together. Yeah. They complete each other. Yeah. So, and it's a become a global phenomenon, GAPS, because people all over the world need this information. The same processes that began in the Western countries are rolling all over the globe, causing the same problems in the whole of humanity. I never expected that to happen, but the first book is translated into 26 languages now. We've got more translations coming in. The Blue Book has been translated into 5 languages already. We've got more translations coming. So clearly this information is much needed.
It is much needed. And you have a fantastic training as well that I have had the honor to pass and certify as a practitioner a year ago. Together with our doctor, Carola Bengtsson, also at FunMed. So it's a really, really good training, I have to say. So it is, as I said, it is spreading a lot.
Yes, we do online training courses on gapstraining.com.
Yeah.
We have many courses there now. We've got a catalog of courses for people who have a prior training, who have a clinic to run, for people who do not have any previous training, and for people who just want to go through the protocol themselves, have particular problem and need guidance. So they can sign up and go through their own course at the pace that they need to go through it, and we will help them. We'll answer all their questions and support them.
Yeah, so I have to say, it's a really, really good training. But you also written a green book that is called Vegetarianism Explained, which is very easy to read. And it's really, I would really recommend it to anyone who are considering going vegan or vegetarian. Let's introduce to the listener what your experience is, because you are very, very both experienced clinically working with, but also made a lot of research. You have 2 postdocs about this. So share with us, Dr. Natasha.
Absolutely. So some years ago, I started getting a lot of young people with mental illness, anorexia, bipolar disorder, anxiety, depression, who became ill because of vegetarianism. Before they became vegetarian or vegan, they were perfectly healthy. They were healthy kids. And I became very interested. I tried to understand what's going on. So the first thing I tried to do is look at the science of the subject. And very quickly I've discovered that there isn't one scientific study, not one, you can trust. All of them have been designed by a pro-vegetarian lobby, the data has been incorrectly analyzed, the whole thing is just cannot be trusted at all. The biggest lie is the China study. And that's the study that all the vegans and vegetarians wave into our faces, saying that this is the proof that we should all be vegan. So having discovered that, I started looking at the basic sciences, at the biology, physiology, zoology, agriculture, and other sciences, and the clinical practice, of course. And based on all the knowledge I got from my clinical practice and from clinical practice of other doctors, and all of these basic sciences, I've written a book called Vegetarianism Explained. It's this book. It's not very thick, and it's got nice pictures, and it's written with young people in mind, because it's the young people that fall for this propaganda first and become very ill as a result. So what I describe in this book and what I explain in this book, that Mother Nature gave us 2 groups of foods, plant foods and animal foods. And these 2 groups of foods work very differently in the human body. Very, very differently. The way human digestive system is designed is that plants are indigestible for us. The fact that I've discovered in basic sciences from 1930s that the only things on our planet that can digest plants are microbes. Nobody else can digest plant matter. Microbes. Mother Nature used that fact in creating the digestive system of a cow, or giraffe, or elephant, or antelope, or deer, or another herbivorous animal. A cow has 3 enormous stomachs full of microbes. And this group of stomachs is called rumen, the rumen in a cow. So these are ruminants, these animals, because they've got this kind of digestive system. So the cow doesn't digest the grass herself. It's that community of microbes in her 3 enormous stomachs, in her rumen, that digest the plant matter for her. converted into things that her body can use and grow and survive. We human beings do not have a rumen. We have a small stomach, only one stomach, and it produces hydrochloric acid. Acidity can be below 1 pH when we are hungry. Very hostile environment for any microbe to survive. So human stomach, if it is healthy, has virtually no microbes living in it. And that means that plants are indigestible for us because only microbes can digest plant matter. But stomach juice in human beings, the hydrochloric acid, pepsin, and other elements of the stomach juice are perfect for digesting meat, fish, eggs, and dairy. Only these animal foods digest properly in a human being, and then the content of the stomach is passed into several meters of intestines, where absorption of food happens, and the only things we can absorb are things which properly digested, right? Hmm. Plants just sit in the human stomach. They do not get digested. They're just waiting there. Hmm. They're sitting there. Then they go through those meters of intestines and giving us not much. They give us some juices, some minerals, maybe vitamin C a little bit, some little bits and pieces. And then as the plants go through intestines, where meat, fish, eggs, and dairy get absorbed, digested and absorbed, and they feed us and they build our physical structure and they heal any damage and they maintain the physical structure of the body. Because human body renews itself all the time. Every cell in your body has a short life. It works very hard. It gets old, it dies, it gets removed, and a new baby cell gets born to replace the old one. So your body every day gives birth to trillions of cells to maintain its physical structure and to heal any damage, to repair any damage. In order to give birth to trillions of cells, building materials are required. These building materials can only come from meat, fish, eggs, and dairy. Because these are the only things that human stomach can digest properly, and your intestines then can absorb properly. Plants go all the way through all of that system and land in your bowel, in your large intestine. That is our rumen. That is the equivalent of a rumen in a cow. Because that's where the majority of the microbes in our digestive system live, in your bowel. And they work on that plant matter, and they digest it, and they do what they can from there, and they release some nutrients for us. But the difference between us and cows is that in a cow, her rumen is at the beginning of her digestive system, before absorption of food happens. In us human beings, our rumen is at the end of the digestive system. All the absorption has already happened higher up. It's too late. We get some bits and pieces from it, but it's not enough to maintain the physical structure you live in. Hmm. So these are the scientific facts about plant matter and about animal foods. Hmm. Animal foods are the feeding building foods for human beings. Plants do not feed us. Hmm. So why do we eat them at all? Because plants contain powerful cleansers. They have antioxidants, phenols, salicylates, lectins, various vitamins, minerals. So various things which help our bodies to stay clean on the inside. And on top of that, they give us colors, flavors, fun. It's nice to eat them if your digestive system can handle them. Mm. And they feed that microbial community in your bowel. The problem is, majority of humanity on the planet is moving to a situation where 100% of us are going to be gapsters. Almost 100% of Western population already have gaps. Hmm. What is gaps? It means your microbial community in your bowel is abnormal, pathogenic. Because you are eating antibiotics for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Vast majority of all agricultural chemicals used on our crops are antibiotics in their nature. There's broad spectrum antibiotics. Mm. The most commonly used one is glyphosate, a herbicide with a brand name Roundup. Practically everything you buy in a supermarket is full of glyphosate. You are eating antibiotics all the time, all day long. These antibiotics are damaging the microbial community in your digestive system. The only way to live with microbes is to have harmony. Every microbial community in nature is harmonious, it's balanced. All microbes are present in there and they all control each other. They don't allow any one of them to get out of control and start causing trouble. But if you're eating antibiotics all the time, you are killing off part of that microbial community and the balance is gone. The harmony is gone. Microbes which have not been killed get out of control, overgrow, and become pathogenic. So almost from my point of view, 100% of Western population, particularly Anglo-Saxon world, are all gapsters. They all have pathogenic microbial community living in their digestive system. So this pathogenic microbial community digests the plants in their own way, converting them into millions of poisonous chemicals. At the same time, these pathogenic microbes damage the integrity of your gut wall, making it porous and leaky, causing holes in your gut wall. Literally, it becomes like a sieve. As a result, food doesn't get any chance to be digested properly before it absorbs. It absorbs undigested. And then the immune system, of course, reacts to these undigested bits of food in your blood, in your lymph, attacks them, and that reaction shows itself up as a food allergy or intolerance. Food allergy and intolerance can show up as any symptom in your body, from a skin rash, from hives, to chronic cystitis, to panic attacks, anxiety, lack of memory, mental illness, asthma attack, heart disease, liver disease, anything, anything at all. And the reaction can be immediate or delayed. You might be on any given day, you have no idea what you're reacting to. You can be reacting to something you just had for lunch, plus something you had yesterday or a few days ago or even 2 weeks ago. Mm. All these reactions overlap on top of each other. And on any given day, the person just cannot figure out, what am I reacting? As long as your gut wall is like a sieve, damaged, porous, leaky, you are reacting to everything you eat because everything absorbs undigested. There is no point to juggle your food. You need to heal and seal your gut lining to stop these reactions and allergies. You have to build a new gut lining for yourself. And in order to do that, you have to follow the GAPS diet described in my GAPS books. So that is about the food. But so this undigested food absorbs in people with GAPS. On top of that, all those millions of poisonous chemicals that your pathogenic gut flora converted the plant matter into also absorb. Hmm. And wherever they get to, they cause disease. Every chronic disease is GAPS. From rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, psoriasis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, every mental illness is GAPS. Every learning disability is GAPS. Autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, diabetes type 1, heart disease, atrial fibrillation, anything, every chronic hormonal abnormalities, neurological illness, all of it is GAPS. All of it is due to that toxic river flowing from your gut into your blood, into your lymph, being distributed around your body and causing disease and reactions. So this is GAPS. That's what happens in people. So we now have people in the world, and you probably heard about them. There is a carnivore movement around the world. These are young people who are not eating plants at all. When they remove all plant matter from their regimen, they find that they recover from all kinds of so-called incurable illnesses and feel great. And they have no intentions of reintroducing plants at all because their microbial community is so pathogenic in their digestive system, it cannot digest plant matter properly. It converts it into poisons and makes these people ill. The first time I came across this phenomenon was some 10, 15 years ago. I don't remember now precisely when a group of mothers contacted me. These were breastfeeding mothers who had exclusively breastfed babies, a few weeks old, little darlings. Vomiting, diarrhea, vomiting, diarrhea. The child is not putting weight on. The child is losing weight and not developing. Doctors do testing, find that these babies react to every protein on the planet. And the parents are told to stop breastfeeding. The child is put on synthetic formula, and the parents are told you can never give them protein. We cannot live without proteins. Mm. So these mothers were in desperation. They contacted me. I knew that the fact that these children are reacting to all proteins means that their digestive systems are very damaged. Parents pass their gut flora to their children, the mother and the father. And we have a growing population of babies and children in the world who have very damaged gut flora because that's what they got from their mommy and daddy. So these children have very damaged gut flora, very pathogenic, very damaged gut wall. All protein was absorbing undigested, and the child was reacting to them. That is the cause of it. So the more the gut is damaged, the more the gut flora is damaged, the less a human being can tolerate plant matter. We tried a very limited form of GAPS diet, which was a first stage of the GAPS introduction diet, where very few plants are allowed, and they are cooked very thoroughly and fermented very thoroughly, but the children continued reacting. So the next logical step was to remove all plants altogether. So we removed all plant matter. These babies lived on meat stock made at home, on raw egg yolks, on fermented milk, fermented dairy, and on fish, on meat and fish cooked in water. We started getting results. Diarrhea stopped, vomiting stopped, the children started growing, started putting weight on. Now some of these children are between 10 and 14 years old and beautiful children. No physical disabilities, no mental disabilities, no problems at all. But what we found very, very difficult with these children is to introduce plant matter. Many of them had to sit on a no-plant GAPS diet, where we eat no plants for 5, 6, 7 years. Some of them are still on this diet and still cannot introduce even a tiny bit of a vegetable. They react to them because their gut flora is still not straightened up. It is still abnormal in these children. Majority have introduced vegetables. Majority now are eating better. They're eating plant matter as well. So these children have taught me a very important fact that every human being needs to understand. Human beings can live without eating plants perfectly well. Strictly speaking, we do not need to eat plants. We do not need 5 a day or 10 a day or 15 a day. We do not need to eat fruit and vegetables. We do not need to eat greens. We do not need to eat grains, beans, nuts, seeds, whatever comes from the plant world. We can live perfectly well without them. But what my clinical experience has taught me is that human beings cannot live without eating animal foods. That is impossible. They develop severe collapse of the immune system. They get mononucleosis. They get another severe infection, one after another, antibiotic, antibiotic, antibiotic. Then they become GAPSTAs. Then they get mental illness. And then they get neurological illness. They get multiple sclerosis, hormonal collapse. They simply fall apart. Mm. The human body cannot live without meat, fish, eggs, and dairy.
No, just a question about the carnivore. I find it interesting. C vitamin. It's a topic that is always discussed when you talk about carnivore or no plant GAPS. Where do you get the C vitamin from? Unless you eat raw liver, I guess.
Liver has a high level of vitamin C. Mm. And other meats contain vitamin C. Eggs contain vitamin C. If the chickens are in the sunlight, eating herbs and grasses and other things. And it also shows that clearly we do not know everything about vitamin C. Mm. Because these people are now who have been on carnivore, who have been on the no-plant GAPS diet, they have no signs of any nutritional deficiencies at all. Mm. Bushy tails, bright eyes, rosy cheeks, beautifully thriving children and adults. So clearly they have no vitamin deficiencies. So clearly we don't know everything about vitamin C or any other vitamins. Human beings can get everything they need from animal foods. Mm. So veganism, a regimen where a human being eats only plant matter and tries to live only on plant matter, is not a diet. It is a form of fasting. This form of fasting exists in India. It's part of pilgrimage in the Hindu pilgrims, in the religious pilgrimage, and they do it for no longer than 41 days. They say it's very difficult. I've spoken to these people, and they've explained this to me themselves. they go on a vegan regimen while they're traveling to their sacred sites. And they say it's extremely difficult and they will not do it longer than 41 days, maximum 42. Hinduism is the oldest religion on our planet that we know of, more than 30,000 years old. So these people should know something. Vegetarianism, where people eat some animal foods on a daily basis, such as good quality dairy, high-fat dairy and eggs, and occasional fish and occasional meat, can be maintained as a lifestyle, because all the feeding and building for your body comes from the animal foods, from dairy and eggs, and occasional meat and fish. And such cultures do exist in India as well, and it's amongst people who live away from the sea, the rivers and the lakes. Because people who live by the water in India all eat fish for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they consider that to be the most important piece of food on their plate. They eat it first. So the fish, the seafood, sustains the physical structure of their bodies. People who are vegetarians traditionally in India are vegetarians out of poverty, not by choice. The animal that they can bring up and grow, they can sell, and that gives them enough money to buy enough rice, you know, and beans for the whole family for the whole year. So they're vegetarians out of poverty, not out of choice. And when they do have a chance to eat some meat and to eat some fish, they never say no. And all of them eat a lot of dairy and eat a lot of eggs. They all have chickens, ducks. They add eggs to all their meals. And why do you think a cow is a sacred animal in India? Because she gives them ghee, butter, cheese, cream, milk, an animal food that sustains the physical structure of their bodies. They understand that without a cow or a goat, they will perish. That is why cows are sacred animals in India. So a vegetarian who ferments a lot of his plant matter to make it more digestible and who eats plenty of dairy, plenty of eggs, and occasionally eats fish and meat can sustain their body. What we need to understand about human body is that about 70% by weight of your body is water, almost 99% by the molecular count. And what's left, the dry weight, is half and half protein and fat. When we analyze human proteins and fats in the laboratory, we find that in their biochemical composition, they're very similar to proteins and fats we get from meat, fish, eggs, and dairy. From animal foods. Those proteins and fats are very compatible with our protein and fat. It's easy for us to digest them and to use them to build our physical structure, to maintain it. Plants have lots of proteins and fats. The most famous one is gluten, the most researched one. And the more we research gluten, the more everybody realizes that nobody can digest it. It damages everybody. Even people who are on the face of it don't seem to react to bread and pasta and other things made out of wheat flour. When we actually test them, we find that they do react. They just never realize that their lack of memory or their eczema or chronic cystitis or athlete's foot or whatever, you know, their allergies are due to the gluten that they eat. Proteins and fats in plants have very different biochemical structure from our proteins and fats, and they are indigestible for the human digestive system. They have no ability to build our physical structure to maintain it. That is why veganism is not a diet, it is a form of fasting. Many people in the world are very toxic, overweight. They could do with a bit of fasting, because fasting is very healing for a person who accumulated a lot of toxicity in their body. So when they go on a vegan regimen, they start cleansing in a powerful way. A cleaner body feels better than a toxic one. And so they start feeling better, these people, in the first few weeks. And that's the time when they write their evangelical blogs and tell the whole world how wonderful veganism is and write their books even, you know, and other things. But then at a certain point, the body finishes cleansing and it becomes hungry. And it gives this person a signal, I'm hungry now, feed me. The way it gives this signal, it gives you a desire for a roast chicken, for bacon and eggs, for a pot of cream, for a creamy cheese, you know, for something like that. Mm. Problem is, many of these vegans have convinced all of their friends and family that veganism is the way to go and have written blogs and started getting income from all of this. So they do not listen to their body. They force it to continue cleansing while the body is asking to be fed. Hmm. And at that point, the body has no choice but to start breaking down muscle and bone and other tissues to feed more important organs, to feed your brain, your heart, your lungs, your liver, and other vital organs so you don't perish. So they start losing muscle mass, they start losing bone mass, they start losing brain mass, these people. And the brain literally shrinks. We see it on scans in long-term vegans. Their brain shrinks. As a result, they cannot perceive what is happening to them. Their cognitive ability declines, their critical ability declines in these people. They become black and white. They become hangry. That's the term in the professional circles, made out of the words hungry and angry. They're angry people because the brain is starving and it's angry. So their personality changes in these people. I have seen many of those people. And now we have a growing population of recovering vegans in the world.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
People who were vegans for 20 years, some even managed 30 years. It's amazing how resilient the human body is, how long it can manage to survive on cleansing only without feeding. But eventually all of them hit rock bottom. They get so ill, so debilitated, that they have to face the fact that I cannot continue. I have to start eating meat. When they start eating meat, they start recovering. There are books now written by these recovering vegans, and I have met many, many of them. And from my clients, from my patients, and from these recovering vegans, I hear these stories, which actually explain, you know, this statement that you hear from some vegans. Oh, I've been a vegan for zillions of years, and look at me kind of thing. I'm fine. You know, many people say to this to me that my neighbor has been a vegan for 20 years and he seems to be all right, surviving kind of thing. Well, the first time I came across this phenomenon is it's a phenomenon of split personality, as I say it. When I met a boy from who came to me, a boy from Edinburgh, and he told me this story. He said that I was a vegan for 4 months and I was walking along the streets of Edinburgh distributing leaflets about veganism. And a smell of roasted chicken wafted out of a shop. And he said, I went into some kind of trance. I walked into the shop. I bought a whole chicken. I came outside. I sat on the curb and I ate the whole chicken. And then I came out of this trance and I was so ashamed of myself. So you are the first person I have ever told this to. I have never mentioned this to anyone. That's what all of these long-term vegans go through regularly. Mm-hmm. When their brain, because it's starving to such a degree, it switches off conscious mind and forces them to eat animal foods, to eat meat. They have a binge on meat, a meat binge. Once the body satisfied its needs, then it switches the conscious mind back on. The person comes out of this trance and is so ashamed of themselves, they never tell anyone about this. This is their big secret that they keep to themselves. And human beings have an ability to somehow shut away the memories that they don't want to face. They don't even remember that somehow. It just somehow it goes into the subconscious. They don't even remember such things. And that is what most recovering vegans eventually remember and tell us about. That's what sustained their bodies. So don't believe these vegans when they tell them that they're okay. They haven't touched anything animal at all. So in this book, I have a whole chapter on fasting. There are many people in this world who could do with a therapeutic fast. These are people who are overweight and who have accumulated a lot of toxicity in their bodies. Toxins usually give you headaches, bad skin, overloaded liver, digestion is not doing well, there's indigestion probably, belching and burping and gas and other symptoms. So there are many forms of fasting. And fasting is as old as the hills. You know, even ancient religious scriptures tell us about fasting. One can fast simply on water, drinking only water. You can fast on juices. You can fast on a mono fast, eating one particular food and nothing else. And you can fast on a vegan regimen. That is a form of fasting. It's one of the most easiest one for people to follow and to sustain. But as you fast on veganism, you need to listen to your body. It will give you a signal at a certain point. I finished fasting. Feed me. And at that moment, you do need to reintroduce animal foods. Mm. In that book, I explain in that chapter how to come out from a fast correctly. Because if you go to many fasting clinics around the world, they will do their best to turn you into a vegan. They will make sure that you come out of the fast as a vegan. That's not correct. That is not the right thing to do from my point of view, from my professional point of view. So I explain step by step how to come out of a long fast. Mm. In this book.
And then there are two discussions. First, around this vegan and veganism or vegetarianism. First, it is for my body, which we have addressed. And the other one is we have to save the planet and the topsoil.
Yes, absolutely. That is the big push. We live in a world of nutritional misinformation. And the misinformation and the propaganda, direct propaganda for vegetarianism and veganism, comes from global corporations. The same people own all global corporations, the same small group of people, including all agriculture and food industry and medical industry and pharmaceutical industry, which all feed into each other and support each other. And these are the same people who appoint our governments. Many people believe that we live in a democracy. All prime ministers, all presidents, all high-ranking officials are appointed. Nobody's elected in this world. And they are controlled by the same corporations, by the same people. And it is profitable for these people to make the whole planet vegan. Let me explain why. I'm an organic farmer. I have been an organic farmer for the last 10 years. 10 years ago, we got a piece of land, which was very damaged, industrially damaged. And nature just shows us how resilient it is and how amazing it is. Because in 10 years only, this damaged piece of land turned into an abundant paradise. Mm. It's just amazing how nature works, how wonderful it is. And what I've learned through organic farming, I've learned that the easiest things to work with on an organic farm and the easiest things to produce on an organic farm are meat, eggs, and dairy. Animals are easy. You're busy with them 1 hour in the morning with chickens, ducks, geese, cows, sheep, goats, pigs, and you're busy 1 hour in the evening. The rest of the day is free. As long as you provide them with pasture, you provide them with the natural habitat they're supposed to live in, as long as your chickens are roaming free, all over the place, they'll find their own food. As long as your cows and goats and sheep are on pasture, as long as your pigs are in a forest where they belong and they find their own food there, you don't have to even look at them. They will take care of themselves and be very happy and healthy and delighted and give you beautiful food. But the hardest thing to produce on an organic farm, truly organic farm, without cutting any corners, is vegetables. Hmm. vegetables and grains and beans and other plant matter. That's where the hard labor is. That's where you have to work the whole day. Because the weather changes all the time. You know, the weather is different every year. And last year you got lots of cabbages and no carrots. This year you got lots of carrots and no cabbages. And you've done everything the same, but the yield is not guaranteed. Mm. It depends on the weather. It depends on the season. It depends on some farmer who sprayed his field not far away and all the bugs run away and found my organic cup. You know, or something else changes all the time. So the yield on an organic farm for plant matter is not guaranteed. You can get nothing. Mm. Or you can get so much that you don't know what to do with it on a given year. Mm. And it is where all the hard labor is. The weeding is never ending. The dealing with soil, dealing with everything is a lot of work. When we come to the industrial farming, the chemical with big machines, chemicals, you know, these two things swap. Producing enormous amounts of commodity crops, plants, grains, beans, sugar beet, and so on, rapeseed, is easy for them. One man with all the machines and chemicals can serve thousands of acres. Now even this man will be replaced because everything's getting computerized. These machines will very soon be driving on their own on these fields. There won't be even a man sitting in those combine harvesters or tractors or whatever it is. Easy. The scientists have worked it out for them. All the seeds are pelleted in chemicals. They hybridize. So you spray this on day 5. You spray that on day 14. You spray that later on. And here's a chemical for this and a machine for this. And it works. It produces huge amounts of commodity crops full of chemicals. Nobody's testing, you know, what it, and with a low nutritional value. But nobody's interested in that. They're interested in the yield and the profit. So it's profitable and easy for them. Mm. But when it comes to animals and birds, that's where all the headache is, and that's when it's unprofitable. Because animals and birds refuse to comply with the industrial agricultural model. They get sick and they die. They need pasture. They need to be under the sunlight. They need to have herbs and grasses. They need to occupy land. Animals and birds. But industrial agriculture doesn't want to do that. It's taken them all off the land, locked them up in prisons called CAFOs, confined animal factory operations. And they overproduce, they've plowed their pastures, they're growing all their commodity crops, their profitable grain and whatever else, their soya. And then they feed these commodity crops and soya to the animals in the prison. Grain and soya is not the right food for animals and birds. It makes them sick. They need grass. And they need more than 60 grasses and herbs on an organic pasture. And they need sunlight. And they need rain. They need that kind of environment. Instead, they're locked up in a prison where they never see the sun, never see the light of day, and they're fed commodity crops. So they get sick. That is why they're slaughtered young before they develop cancer, before they develop such arthritis that they just fall into the muck that they live in. They stand in their own excrements. These excrements, when they land on the pasture, it is the most precious thing for the soil, for our planet. Cow manure, sheep manure, goat manure, pig manure, chicken manure. These are the precious gifts that an animal or a bird gives our planet. But it has to land on soil, on living soil, because it inoculates it with a microbial community. Living soil under your feet is a microbial community, highly balanced, highly structured. Highly complex microbial community. Industrial agriculture sprays chemicals and kills that microbial community. So the soils turn into a dead dust, which cannot feed plants. That is why the farmers around us, all of them are over 70. All old, these people. Their children don't want you to have anything to do with it, usually. And they all say, when I was a boy, everything grew up on our fields without any chemicals, and there were worms in our soil. Now there are no worms, and if I don't put chemicals on my fields, nothing will grow at all. Mm. Because he, during his 70 years of life, has killed his soil with all those machines and chemicals, and the soil turned into a dead dust. Mm. Healthy living soil holds water when it rains on pasture. It swells. Mm. Soil holds almost 100 times its weight in water when it rains. It becomes like a sponge. It swells. And the water that runs off these pastures is crystal clear. It runs off clean. You can drink that water. On these arable fields that the farmers have destroyed, the soil is dead. It cannot hold water. The rains run off those fields into the streams and rivers, and the streams and rivers run brown, dirty. All that brown in our rivers is the soil, the topsoil being washed off those fields. We are losing topsoil at an alarming rate. And that is the most precious part of nature, because that's where all life begins and all life ends. If we lose topsoil, we've lost the life on this planet. The life on this planet will not survive. That is what industrial agriculture is doing. It's destroying the topsoil on our planets. And if these fields have been plowed and sprayed with chemicals above the level of some village or town, then these rains will flood the town or the village, because those fields cannot hold water. If you have intensive rains for a few days, you'll have a flooding. So all the flooding we're getting increasingly in the Western world is due to arable industrial agriculture. That's what they're doing. The precious manure of the animals and birds which are locked up in those prisons lands on concrete in those places instead of landing on living soil. And it's washed into a lagoon where it rots. And instead of giving a gift of microbial community to the soil, it turns into pathogenic, nasty slurry, which rotting away, and that rotting stuff is then washed into the rivers and streams, poisoning the rivers and the streams, and it releases methane, it releases lots of other nasty gases, and then human beings blame the cows for it, blame the animals for it. And they've made a lie, and that is those global corporations that made a lie, that it's cows that cause global warming. So we need to exterminate all the cows. We need to get rid of animal husbandry. The real reason for it is that these global corporations, these same people, invested billions into synthetic meat, synthetic milk, synthetic eggs. These abominations are already in supermarkets. People are already buying them. And real animal husbandry, real eggs, real milk, and real meat are competition for these synthetics. That is why the global corporations want to destroy animal husbandry. And because it's unprofitable for them, the animal husbandry, because they have to use expensive antibiotics on these animals and birds. They have to use expensive steroids. The vet bills are very high because they're all sick, these poor animals. They slaughter them young before they develop cancer. You know, the whole thing is just painful and expensive and unprofitable for the industrial agriculture. That is why they want to destroy animal husbandry. And they want us all to eat synthetics. These synthetics will bring you no health whatsoever. We now know, we have enough research to show that they cause every disease in the world, because the ingredients that they're made of have already been researched. They've been around for a while. Ingredients. So the propaganda for vegetarianism and veganism comes from these global corporations and people who own them. It is profitable and easy for them to produce enormous amounts of plants, but it is unprofitable and impossible for them to produce meat, eggs, and dairy. So they want all of us to be vegans because it simply makes good business sense for them. It's profitable. They employ thousands of very clever psychologists who design the propaganda for them. They press on your emotions and on ignorance. Pro-vegetarian, pro-vegan propaganda is based on ignorance and emotions. They go and film their own prisons where they keep those poor animals and birds in cruel, terrible conditions, appalling conditions, where they commit cruelty on them. They film these places, and then they present them to the young populations of the world as an example of, you should all be vegan. It's wrong to eat meat. Look how these animals are suffering. Look how these birds are suffering. Nobody makes films about a farm like mine, organic farms, where there are happy cows, happy goats, happy pigs, happy chickens, healthy and happy, running around. They have a busy social life. They're eating the food that Mother Nature designed them to eat. They're under the sunlight, under the rain. They're loving their life, and they're loved. And the soil is loved because this soil is healthy and beautiful. Only animals, huge herds of herbivorous animals and birds can restore those damaged arable fields, those dead fields, back to good health. So the truth is, animals do not cause global warming. Methane that they blame on the cows. Yes, some methane comes from those lagoons, from those prisons. But the majority, the vast majority of methane in the atmosphere comes from nitrogen fertilizers, which all our arable industrial farming is addicted to. Because without this nitrogen fertilizer that they spray all the time on those fields, nothing will grow on those dead soils at all. Majority of that nitrogen, as soon as it lands on the land, turns into methane and finishes up in the atmosphere. That's where methane comes from, not from poor belching cows. And when the cows on pasture, and I've witnessed that for 10 years on my own farm, when we bought a piece of land where there was no topsoil, there was topsoil was about this big, and underneath was clay and flint, huge boulders of it. We now build topsoil thanks to our cows, thanks to our goats, thanks to our pigs, thanks to our chickens running around. It's their excrements, which are precious, that inoculate the soil with microbial community. And then the microbial community creates soil, living pasture, living soil. And that soil holds water, and that soil feeds the plants. And that soil, it's a cycle of life, a circle of life that goes on there. So in order to regenerate our planet and restore our planet, we need million times more cows, sheep, goats, buffalo, and other herbivorous animals and chickens. And all of them must be on pasture. And they must be grazed correctly. Not that we learned about agriculture now, the way the regenerative agriculture works. We now understand that the word traditional actually is a very dirty word. It's a bad word. Because what humanity has done for thousands and hundreds of years is wrong, simply wrong. It damages the soil, it damages the pasture. Animals need to be moved all the time to allow the piece of land where they've been to recover, to regrow the grasses and herbs. At least 3 months they need to rest. Pasture needs to rest, and the animals need to be on it for a short period of time. We must not leave them for too long, otherwise they damage pasture. They have no choice. They're hungry. So you keep them for a short period of time, and then you move them, and then you move them again. And they have to go in a circle like that through the whole pasture of the farm. So it needs to be planned out carefully. All of this has been worked out by very good people, wonderful, loving, kind people who love our planet, who truly know what to do, how to regenerate it, how to restore it. And these people have worked it out that it can take us maximum 25 years to restore all of the topsoil, damaged topsoil in our planet, using cattle, sheep, goats. So, from the point of view of saving the planet, we need to eat more meat, more eggs, more milk. We need to create a consumer demand for real meat, real milk, real eggs, instead of eating synthetics from a supermarket. Talking about supermarket, we must all abandon supermarkets. Because who stocks the shelves in a supermarket? Just think for a moment. Who? Those global corporations. Those very people who are destroying our planet, who are poisoning, they're destroying the soil, they're poisoning the whole of humanity, and they want all of you to be vegan. And they control the governments and their agricultural policies, and they work their propaganda through Western governments. The governments are serving those corporations. They're not serving you. They always served the wealthy. They were always appointed by the wealthy, and they always served the wealthy. Every government in the world. So, who stocks the shelves in a supermarket? Industrial agriculture. Every bit of food you buy from a supermarket is full of agricultural chemicals. You are eating antibiotics for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and in between, and turning yourself into a gangster, damaging your body. On top of that, what we need to understand is that food is information. Every bit of food brings information into your body. Information has a vibration, every bit of information. The highest vibration in the world is love. The energy of love has the highest vibration in the world. Look at nature, at healthy nature, healthy forests, healthy grasslands, trees, animals, birds, insects, microbes. They all vibrate love. They're made out of love. They're made out of that energy of love. That's why they're so perfect and so perfectly functional and so beautiful at the same time and so delightful at the same time. What kind of energy does food in a supermarket on a supermarket shelves carry? What kind of vibration? Not love. It'll carry vibration of abuse, grief, disease, greed, toxicity. How is that information going to give you good health? You are buying disease from supermarkets. That is why I tell all my clients to abandon supermarkets, to never ever buy food in a supermarket again. There are plenty of excellent organic farmers, true organic farmers all over the world, because organic label in the supermarket is a lie. Those corporations have realized some 15 years ago or even longer that organics are becoming popular and they wanted a piece of that pie. And because they control our governments, they have changed all the regulations around organics. We now have organic pesticides, hydroponics, and all sorts of other practices which have no place in organics at all. Well, real organic farmers can't even get into a supermarket. It's impossible. They cannot compete with those global corporations. So organic label in a supermarket cannot be trusted. Don't waste your money on it. I'm sure some real organic produce manages to sneak in there, but how do we know which one's which in a supermarket? Instead, what I recommend to people to do is to find real farmers, real farms around your city where you live, or your village, or the place where you live, and buy your food directly from these farmers. The first thing you want to do is to visit the farm. So go to your local farmer's market, go online, ask other people where they're buying their food, and on a weekend, put your whole family, put your kids in the car, and go and visit the farm. The first thing you want to see, a good farmer like that, an organic farmer, will be delighted if you visit his farm because he's got nothing to hide. There will be no bags of chemicals lying about. There will be no refrigerators full of steroids and antibiotics. There will be no metal gates, you know, which keep everybody out. He's got nothing to hide. And you look how the animals are kept. You look how the chickens are kept. You look how the vegetables are grown, how the crops are grown. And you look in the eye of this farmer. Can you trust this person? Is it a good person? Is it a loving person? Does he love his land? Does he love his animals? Does he love his chickens? And then once you found people like that, you buy all of your produce from these people directly. All it takes is just driving there once a week and getting your weekly supply of your foods. And if you talk to your friends and family where you live and form a group, then many of these farmers will be happy to deliver for a group, to one apartment in a city or a house in a city. So your friends and family can come and pick their bits and pieces from you, from your place. So all it takes is getting organized. And by getting organized like that, you will be buying love, food that vibrates love for your family and yourself. And only that food can bring you good health and happiness. Only that kind of information. On top of that, you will be supporting a good farmer because all Western governments support industrial agriculture. They give them subsidies and they make it easy for them. But when it comes to organic, real farmers, the governments are structured and designed to make their lives a misery with their regulations, their meddling, their inspections and whatever else. They just make their lives really difficult. They don't allow them to survive. And the only organic farmers who do survive in the Western world are the ones who have a strong customer base, people who buy directly from the farm. So you will be helping a good farmer like that to survive, a good farm like that to survive, on top of feeding your family proper food. So that's what I recommend to people.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I sometimes, I mean, I'm working for the functional medicine clinic, and we always go back to evolutionary. This is very much summarizing what you're saying, Dr. Natasha, is evolutionary, what are we supposed to eat? What is the body actually made for? The body is not made for pre-packed food with ingredients list. And when people go back to the original line with the vegan and veganism, or you want to have a hamburger, when you do a hamburger at home, you have meat, egg, salt, and pepper. When you have the vegan type of hamburger, it's a very, very long ingredients list that the body, exactly like you say, have no idea what it is or what to do with it. So practically back to basics and see what the body is made for, what it is accustomed to.
If you don't want to eat meat, why do you want a hamburger?
It's a good question.
If you don't want to eat meat, if you think it's wrong to eat meat, why do you want a sausage?
Because you crave the taste?
Well, what that's made of, the very concept of a hamburger, the very concept of a sausage, you know, that's what should be offending a vegan.
Yeah.
Not the ingredients.
Yeah.
On my farm, I have volunteers. I have people from all over the world. My farm is a school. Yeah. Young people come from all over the world to my farm to learn organic farming. They live here for a while and they work here. And that's how they learn, and they immerse themselves into the whole environment of the farm, working with the birds and animals and in the gardens. And we have many vegans coming here, and practically all of them get converted back to eating meat. And we do slaughter our own chickens and our own, you know, we produce our own meats ourselves. So it is important for a vegan or for every human being to take part in processing, in growing the animal, feeding the animal, loving the animal, and then slaughtering an animal and eating it.
Mm-hmm.
When you participate in the whole circle of life like that, all this nonsense gets washed off you, and nobody can bamboozle you anymore. When you go through that experience, because you perceive these things on a almost unconscious level, on a physical level, visceral level, and children need to be exposed to this. Children need to be participating in that. Then we will not have this population of young people who are so easily deceived.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Thank you very much, Dr. Natasha. So your suggestion, just as a conclusive remark, is organize yourself, find a farm who loves the animals, who grows their vegetables, and organize, buy and sell, or not sell, but sort of have a group of friends or other people that are interested to share all the logistics around it.
Absolutely. And I encourage everyone who has any chance to get some land and to start producing your own food.
Mm.
The best food you will ever have on your plate will be the one you've produced yourself with your own hands. Mm. And it is such a joy to work with land, to work with nature, to work with animals and birds. You know, many people nowadays work on a computer because many people you can be anywhere. As long as you've got internet connection and a computer, you can do a job. There are so many jobs nowadays like that, aren't there? So if you live on a farm, you can be looking after your farm and at the same time working.
Mm.
And no matter what stressful situation you might have got during your working hours, you come out onto the farm and all of this stress just goes woof off you.
Yeah.
The chickens, you know, the sheer exuberant joy of healthy nature will just blow that away from you immediately. And you will be filled with joy and filled with happiness and filled with good health as a result. So not only good food you'll be getting, but you will be getting a space of love that you live in.
Hmm.
A lot of joy, and there will be no stress. All the stress will be healed. You'll live in a paradise and eat perfect food as a result. So I encourage everybody to do that. It doesn't have to be that you have to do it on your own. Many people nowadays form communities where they do it together. When they get a piece of land and they start farming together and living together and working together, anything's possible, and there are many variations for that. I encourage everybody to do that.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you very much, Dr. Natasha.
That's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.